Welcome. One of our concerns today is the fact that this is a largely visual course in electrical engineering jail design. Because we're having an audio presentation of it, the concern associated is that someone's driving down the highway trying to read a PDF at the same time they're negotiating 65 mile an hour truck lane changes. So I will do my best to describe the graphics involved. Hopefully this will function without use of the visuals. Or better yet, in conjunction with reading the paper either earlier or later, and using the two to complement. This 3-hour online course presents the concepts and examples of use of electrical engineering in the design of jails and jail renovations. The methods have been successfully applied to county and city detention centers for adults, detention centers for juveniles, and district police stations. There is an implication of low to medium security for such jails, but the population periodically includes serious offenders, violent persons under the influence, and psychiatric patients. Safety for the clients, staff, and public is always the primary goal. This course is made up of the following parts: learning objectives, course introduction, course content including discussion, examples, and detailed narration. On the audio version, there are 3 files. First is entitled Introduction, which includes a tour of the jail to kind of establish context for the discussion. Second introduces the systems, electrical systems, electronic systems that make up the jail and the design considerations. The third is more of the same, but it starts with closed circuit television. There have been advances in closed circuit television. The reason I mention this is one of our goals in the overview course is to reference the specific design courses also available from PDH Online. We have a separate course in closed circuit television design. It goes into a lot more detail on how the cameras work and how the recorders work and things like that. Does not go into detail on pan tilt zoom, does not go into detail on video motion detection, does not go into detail on alarms and response to alarms. So that's what we've put in this section is substantial component on wiring up the television system and also the special features that are essential for good operation in a security setting. This will be followed by a course summary, which is very brief, and related links. And I've changed the format of the course this time. Usually, I mention very briefly what's going on as we go through it, and at the end, I put a little more discussion on the related links. This time, each time the topic comes up, I try to include enough information that it makes sense, include the reference right at that point. Then this is duplicated in the related links. I know sometimes I go nuts trying to go through a fairly long document trying to find a specific line. Well, that's what the related links are. And they've been expanded. In the course material, I've used the primary vendors because this is where you should start. This is what everybody knows. In the related links at the end, I've tried to find some alternate vendors. So if you're in a bidding situation, you've got 3 sources. One, kind of surprising to me, I could not find an alternate supplier for one of the devices. This will come up as we go through the course. And there's a multiple choice quiz at the end. Now, the multiple choice quiz is not part of the audio version. It's not part of the online version. It is an option that you get by clicking on the proper tab on the screen, and then you go into the testing routine. The testing routine is fairly sophisticated, and if you haven't done this before, I think you'll like it. They treat you very fairly, and you have a chance to do it over again if you're not happy with the results. We have learning objectives. Specifically, why are we doing this? Well, at the end of the course, we're hoping you will be able to sketch and explain essential components of electrical power service for a jail. And this is different than a shopping center or a church. Be able to sketch and explain the essential components of electrical distribution system for a jail. Be able to list the special requirements of jail lighting. And they are out of the ordinary. I mean, you will be surprised at this if you haven't been involved in jail design previously. Be able to sketch and explain the block diagram for motorized locking system. Once again, very, very interesting information. One outstanding fact that I want to share with you. People don't replace their locks. Why don't they replace their locks? Because they don't fail. They don't wear out. They last forever. I've been involved in several renovations of medium old, not very old jails, you know, obviously not 1850, but the electromechanical locks that I am familiar with, motorized locks, last forever. They show no wear after 30 years. You take them out, they work fine. Very, very rarely they need adjustment, and I mean very, very rarely. Everything else fails. Everything else deteriorates. These motorized locks are a different animal than I think you've ever run into. Be able to explain the application of life safety egress rules in a jail. Be able to sketch and explain the operation of airlock door controls. Be able to sketch and explain hierarchical control of door systems. Be able to sketch and explain the block diagram of an analog closed-circuit television surveillance system. Be able to sketch and explain the block diagram of an IPTV surveillance system. Be able to list the essential features of time-lapse VCR or DVR or NVR. Be able to explain the relevant aspects of chain of custody for surveillance videos to be used in evidence. Be able to explain the importance of recorder control in response to motion. Be able to explain the importance of camera and recorder control in response to an external alarm. Be able to discuss distance learning, video arraignment, and video visiting. Be able to discuss the question of audio recording and identify the hardware required to do it. Be able to list the essential features of security lighting in the cells. Be able to list the essential features of cell lighting and water control. And the control is different from the lighting fixtures, and we'll get into that in some detail. Be able to list the essential network and database requirements of a jail. Now, if you're about to tell me you're not an IT computer person, why is this here? Because somebody has to coordinate with the IT computer person to get it done. And I am not unhappy when it falls on the electrical engineer because I like this. I mean, I want to put the pipes in the right place. I want to get the right wires in the wall. And if somebody else wants to tell me the kind of jacks and devices they want, that makes me happy. But somebody has to make sure it happens and make sure it runs on the acceptance date. So we're going to have a section here on network and database requirements. So you won't be surprised if you get into these discussions, and you'll know that the discussions must take place. Be able to discuss contraband detection, a developing field of great interest and great value in life safety if you think about it. Be able to discuss visitor management. Be able to sketch and explain the essential components of a jail fire alarm system. This course is intended for architects, engineers, contractors, and construction managers involved in designing and building jails and jail renovations. Interested technical persons will get value for insights into how a relatively isolated section of our society works and how the equipment works to support it. The greatest fear in facilities design is not error, but oversight. An error should be picked up at one of the many reviews which take place. Something that the original designer misses, however, can easily be missed in each of the reviews. And there's a box narrative following this. True story. New multi-story architectural building was erected at a state university. When I say architectural, it's architectural students, you know, architectural teachers. After construction, it was noticed that no restrooms were included. Restrooms were retrofitted into the stairwells with men's and women's on alternate floors. The course is intended to be shallow but wide in discussion of electrical systems in jails. In some cases, new technologies discussed like contraband detection and IPTV. In others, lists are presented like smoke detectors, heat detectors, pull stations, strobe horns, and annunciators. Hopefully, these will help avoiding the oversight problem. Jails are a relatively new phenomenon. Up until about 150 years ago, people found guilty were executed, publicly punished, and then released, or occasionally fined. Incarceration was too expensive. Even today, the United States situation is somewhat unique in the opposite direction, as having a lot of jails. We house 725 persons per 100,000 population, as compared to England, Canada, and Germany, who report about 100 persons per 100,000 population. Now again, that's 725 per 100,000 in the United States, 100 per 100,000 in other advanced civilized countries. This came from Wikipedia, which is one of our references. Wikipedia.wiki/wiki/prison. Many jails and prisons are larger state and federal facilities for long-term sentences, are overloaded and do not comply with guidelines or regulations. There is a lot of renovation and new construction taking place and expected to take place over the next decade. Now, this distinction between jails and prisons, it works pretty well, but it doesn't always work. I was reading the other day one of these newsletters you get on the internet. The state of Florida is building a prison. Okay, states build prisons. No, it's a county prison. It's a county prison for 3,600 inmates. They have a medical wing for 500 patients, and this is a county jail. But again, the concept of jail versus prison, jails are usually for short-term incarceration. You know, you do 30 days in a county jail for getting caught doing whatever or other. If it's 45 days, they send you off to state prison. Now, I don't know that. I'm not a lawyer. And for God's sake, don't take any of the advice in this course as legal advice. But that's the way it seems to work. Also, jails are extensively used as holding facilities. The term detention really means detention. Cops pick up a guy. What do they do with him? They take him to the House of Correction, where he sits until he gets a chance to go in and talk to the judge about what the cop thought he saw. Now, he's not exactly a prisoner until then. He's innocent until proven guilty. He's in detention. But he doesn't get out until the judge sets bail or you know, goes through the next step of it. And setting the trial date. I mean, all these things that make up the judicial system. Well, the front end of it is a jail. The back end of it is the prison. After he's sentenced to 3 years, well, it's 3 years in the state pen or 3 years in the federal facility. I'm pausing now because there's a great controversy going on about commercialized jails. I mean, that's not the right term, but they're contract jails where CCA, I think is the name of the company, is doing a good job reducing costs, reducing... It looks attractive to hire somebody else to run the jails, and wrong word again, run the prisons. So when I say state and federal, well, they're still state and federal. They only exist through the laws of the federal government and the state government. But the state has hired someone to build and operate the facility. And we're talking about jails. We're talking about the little ones. Now, how do the little ones and the big ones differ? I don't know. I never did one of the big ones. Never been in one of the big ones, I'm happy to say also. So I really can't respond to that. But I have had the opportunity to work on several city, county, I'd call them jails. I think you'd call them jails. Houses of detention, houses of correction, things like that for short-term offenders and short-term sentences. I would guess that a big one is very similar to a little one, but there may be scaling factors that are not obvious, and that will not be addressed here. This course presents concepts and examples of the use of electrical engineering in the design of jails and jail renovations. Now, one of these narrative boxes, at times I will share material which is not directly electrical design, but which I feel is important to understand what is going on. I will use boxes like this. The content will not appear on the quiz. And you got that one earlier about the architectural studies building at the state university that didn't have restrooms. I think that's important. You know, yeah, it's a silly aside and it's a distraction from the course content. But people who think that we have a science that is very rigid and absolute don't understand. And let me create one of these box narratives right now while we're on this subject. A difficulty, and I won't say it's the number one difficulty, but it's approaching the number one difficulty in jail design, is the judiciary system. The judges have figured out that no design is final. They can change it at the beginning, they can change it at the middle, they can change it at the end, they can change it 6 weeks after the county has taken acceptance of the facility. After the judges figured this out, they started doing things like that. So those of you who have led a sheltered life with the idea that you sign a contract and then you build it and you close out the contract have not dealt with judges. They have a different viewpoint of the world. I think it's wonderful that they do. They make a contribution that I certainly don't want to do. And I think they do it well. I'm proud of our legal system. But oh, is it hell to be a designer on a jail project dealing with the judges? Well, now, why am I mentioning this to you? Because if you know in advance this is something that requires clarification, you get your clarification. You tell people what their choices are. A terrible, terrible time getting them to choose one. They make a tentative choice and change their mind later. But at least you've started the ball rolling. If you don't do this, they find out from somebody else or from some conference later on something they could have had that they don't have, and they get real unhappy, and they start ballooning the project cost, and everybody's suffering. Well, a little bit of this, perhaps most of it, can be avoided by discussions early on. Usually you don't get a chance to talk to judges. They're very protective about their time. You'll talk to bailiffs, you'll talk to administrators. But again, the point is to get a good working relationship so you're helping them and they understand the cost of making changes. Another box narrative from, again, the published version of the course. For electric power distribution, we look at the continuous load and the peak demand load. That sounds like electrical engineering talk. I apply this principle to electrical design for jails. Peak demand is the violent felon picked up one night and housed in the local jail until he gets a hearing. This person cannot be expected to be placid and cooperative. He may anticipate a much more unpleasant situation in the near future. All systems in the jail must be designed to keep him safe. Keep the other clients safe, perhaps, from him. Keep the staff safe from him. And keep the public safe from him. This is not to say that all clients require provisions of maximum security. There will be drunk drivers waiting only until the judge sets them out on the streets again. There will be drug users, small-time dealers, and prostitutes awaiting near-term release. There may be children guilty of nothing except both parents have been arrested. This course begins with the exploration of a typical jail on a walk-through basis. You'll find that all jails satisfy the same set of criteria, either manually or through automation. For the most part, electrical design focuses on the automation of essential tasks. And I'm hoping this will make more sense as we look at the drawings together and talk about the components that make up a jail. In the next section, we'll look much more closely at the electrical systems and how they are installed. It's sometimes surprising to discover the requirement for plaster ceilings in client areas as opposed to drop ceilings in the lobby and administrative areas. In the third section, each electrical system will be presented in terms of sketches, specifications, and narration. Now, let me step back to what I just said there about the plaster ceilings in the prison areas, the prisoner areas. That's true. I drilled through that plaster to run some cabling for closed-circuit TV. I had to fish it through the firewalls up there that, of course, are not on the plants to get it down to the control room so the guards could see what was going on. We were actually doing the one for the isolation cell where they house suicide watches. And I did this. I mean, when I say it's plaster, it's plaster. I got the dust behind my glasses. But I couldn't find it on the internet. I go to research this stuff to kind of confirm things I think I know. And all they're selling are steel ceilings. They have some very, very nice steel ceilings with sound absorption layers on them. But they weren't selling plaster ceilings for prisoner areas. I went to MasterSpec. You may be familiar with them. It's a product of ARCOM. Comes from the American Association of Architects. It, as I warned you earlier, there's a PDH online course on CSI specifications. And so that's how that happens to be fresh in my mind. But I went to the CSI specs, the MasterSpec, and all they have are these steel ceilings. And by the way, they give you a nice list of available fenders. And I looked at them, Excuse me a moment, please. I was thinking about buying one of those cough switches. I think you can recommend that I do that next time, right? Okay, let's start the walk through the jail. Now, this is one of the jails I worked on. This is an actual construction plan. It happens to be a construction plan of the jail with an overlay of the electrical, because obviously that's all I'm interested in. But if we were to look at the overall plan, the first thing that strikes you is there's a square area with dashed lines around it. And if you're familiar with plan drawings, that means it's a fence. So yeah, a fence around it. It doesn't say anything about the razor tape at the top, and it's not an electrical consideration, but that's what we're talking about. And it's some distance from each of the buildings so that the TV camera can see a guy running from the building to the fence and then trying to climb the fence, if something like that should happen. Lower left-hand corner of this picture is a box sticking off of the fence. The box is the first airlock we're going to encounter in this course. There are two sliding gates. The outside sliding gate lets somebody in, then the outside gate closes, the inside gate opens, and they drive on in. On what basis do they come in? Well, at one time there was a guard stationed out there. Finances do not permit stationing a guard out there. There's now an intercom there. Person pushes the button. Happens to be an iPhone, A-I-P-H-O-N-E. Very conventional commercial intercom unit that has survived for 30 years. That's kind of surprising. I think that's a good reference to that particular vendor. On a post, the post has survived for 30 years. The gates don't survive. Every 3 months, they're spending hundreds of dollars repairing those gates. But in any event, this is the first airlock. This is for entry of visitors, as you would expect. They go to the visitors' parking lot. This is for the entry of paddy wagons. And I know I'm not supposed to call them that. There's probably some fancy formal name for, you know, the vehicles with the chain link fence separating the front and the drivers and the back with the prisoners, sometimes chaining down the prisoners. My daughter got picked up for curfew violation, so I know a little bit about these paddy wagons. And when you see a teenager barefoot in the back of one of those things, it's an image you don't forget. In any event, the paddy wagons go left at the entrance, go around the building to the back, where there's another motorized gate. Slides open. They come into a closed area. The gate closes. Then they open an airlock into the backside of the facility, which is called incoming processing. So if you hear the term sally port, that's where they deliver and pick up prisoners. It's better to separate the prisoner transfer from the visitors, but this thing was built in 1978, and this is the way they did it. The whole time I was there, they were talking about running another road out the back to bring the prisoners in separately, and while we were there, they started building a shopping center there, so I don't think they're going to be running the prisoners through there. That's what we see from the drawing. Oh, and there are four circles kind of in the center of the fences on the four sides. Those are pan, tilt, zoom cameras on posts. And we'll talk about that as we get into the application closed-circuit TV. I think I'll tell you a little later about how I happen to be working on this place. But that's the place we're looking at. And it's typical. It's got a visitor area in the front. It's got staff areas in the middle. This particular jail has four pods. A pod is a unit that has cells with the heavy doors like you see on the Discovery Channel and courtroom TV and all this, has a day room, and some have a dormitory. We'll get into the dormitories. Obviously, each of the pods has a guard station that looks out over what's going on in there, keep an eye on people. So we have four pods, four remote control rooms. We have a master control room that supervises all of those. Master control room also operates all of the motorized gates outside along the fence, supervises incoming processing. Incoming processing happens to be its own operation, but it's open for master control. If they have any trouble there, master control comes over to help. We have a small infirmary in this jail. We have a visiting area where the prisoners can sit on the jail side in booths, and the visitors can sit on the visitor side in booths. And they're still in jail, and we're still out of jail, but they get to talk. And that will come into our discussion. Of special importance are facilities that are essential for the operation of a jail, and they're hotel facilities. Any place people stay, you've got to have something like this. Got to have a laundry. Where are you going to get some clean clothing, some clean sheets? Well, you can send it out, but it kind of makes sense to do it within the facility. It's funny. The reason I'm pausing, I'm thinking of some hospitals I've done where they have these abandoned laundries because it was cheaper to send it out. Why don't we do that in prisons? Maybe because there are too many TV shows of a prisoner hiding in a laundry bag and writing out in the truck. I mean, I'm sorry, that was a distraction. There's an exercise room. Exercise is mandated by state and federal laws. And that's one of the big complaints about these supermax facilities where the prisoners get no exercise at all. They're supposed to have regular exercise. Obviously, you have to have inside exercise space because at least in northeastern United States, there are inclement days where nobody goes out. But there is an outside exercise space too because when it's nice and people want to exercise, it's a good place to be. A kitchen. People have to eat. In this facility, meals were taken to the day rooms for serving. I like that. I also did a juvenile detention facility that had a central lunchroom, and you're going to hear one of the stories about kids trying to break out through the kitchen successfully, unfortunately, and in a very expensive way. So I like the idea. Take the food out to the day rooms. I can understand maybe the prisoners don't like that as much. There's a chapel. Good news about the chapel is it's a nice little chapel, and it's got drawings in it done by prisoners. You wouldn't think of this. I mean, the people that work at a jail are proud of their jail. They try to keep it clean. They like to make it a decent place for the prisoners, a decent place for themselves, decent place for the visitors, inspectors, technicians. I mean, there's pride in a well-run jail. And they were very proud of this chapel. Now, that's the good news. The bad news was they got an overflow situation where they had way too many prisoners for the facility. They had them sleeping on the floor in the chapel. What's wrong with that? Well, it's got drop ceilings. They're not supposed to have drop ceilings in prisoner areas. There was no facility for guards in the chapel. One of the goals of this project that I was on was put TV cameras in there. So if they ever get in that situation again, at least they'll know if somebody's up wandering around. And, there's a lawyer, attorney visiting booths that have doors on them, very similar to the visiting booths for open visiting, but got doors on them because they're lawyers. And what else should we mention? We're going to get a little more detail as we walk through here, so let's see what comes up. It's impossible to read most of the text at this scale on the drawing. We will zoom in to identify the spaces we are traversing. At this level, though, notice the perimeter fence, the vehicle airlock into the fence space, each of the entrances to and exits from the building. Now, this is something I get very sensitive about, and surprisingly, nobody else seems to care. But as soon as I see one of these drawings, I say, do we have a TV camera pointing at that door? I mean, yeah, there's other ways people can get out of a jail, but doesn't it make sense they'd most likely walk out the door? Now, the one I'm pointing at as I say this is at the end of the kitchen. You got to bring supplies into the kitchen. Sure you do. They had a little loading dock. Well, the problem, any time you've got a kitchen, somebody wants to steal some meat and take it home. You should always have a TV camera pointing at both the inside and the outside of that door. And the building was very nicely designed in 1978. There are emergency exits from each of the pods. Well, what do you do with an emergency exit from a high security pod? You lock it. You don't really want people walking out there. Ever? If they're going someplace, they should go by master control and go by processing, you know, write their name down that they're getting on the paddy wagon to go down to have a hearing. You don't have them go out the side door. And they had a problem with their emergency generator. When they switched over to emergency power, all the outside doors became unlocked. That's one of the hazards with magnetic locks. I keep talking about motorized locks. I like motorized locks. They're just wonderful devices. They are not weather rated. You're taking a serious chance when you put them on outside doors. So the guy who designed this put mag locks on it. Mag locks are okay if you got a UPS. Mag locks are not okay if you switch over to emergency power and someone inadvertently put them on a different panel. They're on a normal power panel instead of an emergency panel. One of the prisoners told the guards the outside doors were unlocked. Now, again, it's a little unexpected, the relationships people have in a jail. These are short-term sentences. They're just there for a hearing. Most of these people want to finish their sentence and get on with their life. They're not real interested in going out the unlocked door and walking through the broken gate at the entrance. They want to get rid of, they want to complete their sentence. And there's not necessarily an adversarial relationship between the guards and the prisoners. I had prisoners stop and talk to me while I was working on this construction job. Hey, why was the engineer in there running cable? Because they felt it was an absolute emergency to get the suicide watch on the system. And with the coordination of everybody involved, we got that one on actually before the, while the contractor was marshaling his equipment, we got that station running. Okay, point was that yes, there's reason to fear in a jail, but perhaps not as much as you might think ordinarily. Things disappear from your tool pouch. That happens in schools. That happens in shopping centers. There are bad people there. There are violent people. I mean, people you want to stay away from. Usually they're identified and segregated. There are a lot of people that are just trying to get by day to by day, pretty much like the rest of us. Jail terminology is critical. Oh, this is one of the box narratives. Jail terminology is critical in order to communicate with corrections personnel, the judiciary personnel, and funding personnel, usually a governmental facilities manager. A strong suggestion from this course is to listen carefully to what they say and use their words whenever possible. It looks like a jail to me, but they may think it's a detention facility or a justice center. The individual client housing look like pods to me, but the sample facility called them units, and another place calls them halls or wings. By the way, they had separate control rooms on each of these halls, so it did look like a pod to me, even though they called it a hall, but it was a detention hall. A critical tool in every jail is what I call the airlock. It's a space with a door in, door out. The door in must be locked before the door out can be opened. This is a very basic PLC, programmable logic controller function, which is greatly appreciated by the control personnel who must operate these doors hundreds of times each day. When I visited the facility, the yard cameras were focused on their own roof. Several air conditioners were being replaced, and the guards wanted to make sure there were no clients up there with the workers. The driving lanes and parking spaces are not shown on the drawing. Vehicle entrances through the sliding gates in the airlock at the lower left. Roadway goes straight for paddy wagons who deliver the prisoners through the sliding gate at the top of the walled-in space and through the Sallyport airlock. Staff and visitor vehicles enter through the same sliding gates at the bottom left, but turn right to the parking area. This facility had trouble with the sliding gate since it was built, and desperately needed CCTV observation at the entry gate. We park and enter the vestibule into the lobby. Now, this is the blow-up of the bottom part of the drawing of the facility, showing the main entrance, the lobby, the fact that there are staff offices to the left, and open visiting to the right. Master control looks out directly in the lobby to the main entrance, and has some locking functions out there. Interesting to me, there's just an open door from the lobby into the office. I don't think I would do that. Some of the visitors aren't real happy either, and I think I'd like to slow them down to come in and complain about it. There was a sign on this, no entry, but I went through it all the time, and while I was there, all kinds of staff were going through it all the time. And I don't know a better way to do it, but it was uncomfortable to me to have this open office area just one swinging door away from the lobby. Again, fine text is unreadable, but it should be clear there are visitor areas, staff areas, and prisoner areas. The vestibule at the entrance is not outfitted as an airlock in the security sense. The lobby usually contains visitors inquiring about the visiting schedule or waiting for a visit. There is an administrative staff area off the lobby with no access to the prisoner area except through the airlock to the right of master control. So the visitor area is treated the same as the open office and administrative area. The only way to get into the prisoner area is to go through the airlock on the right-hand side of master control. That's the airlock that got hundreds and hundreds of operations per day. And we were doing a retrofit in there. Can you imagine? We're ripping out their consoles, putting in new consoles, and still the only, well, there were a couple days where they had to have a person standing there and manually unlock the airlock doors. They were never allowed to wedge them open. Do you think they never wedged them open? Forgive me, back to the subject at hand. Approved visitors can enter the prison's area through the airlock, but such passage is usually staff and sometimes vendors or technicians. Screening exists, but it is perfunctory. It would not be termed high security. Visitors can enter the open visiting area by passing scrutiny of the guard station and from the open visiting area to the visitor side of the visiting booths. There's a guard stationed in the open visiting area during visiting hours. Not prominent on this drawing are the attorney visiting booths on the right side of the visiting booths. They have privacy doors on the visitor's side and on the prisoner's side. Note that master control is located in the center of the facility, with direct sight of critical areas as the visitor entrance, sally port, processing area, and main halls. Master control operates the visitor access airlock and the airlock entrance on the sally port. We'll see later that Master Control also has supervisory control of all pod doors and the CCTV system. North Arrow is becoming more important as the federal courts are enforcing requirements for sunlight for prisoners. Now, why does the electrical engineer care about sunlight for prisoners? Because outside light sources wreak havoc on video motion detector systems. Master Control permits us passage, and we step forward into the congestion space where all the halls converge. Once again, there is a pod upper left, there's a pod lower left, there's a pod upper right, there's a pod lower right, hallways down the middle, and they all converge on Master Control. Incoming processing is just to the north of this, and we pass the infirmary and laundry on one side as we came down. We pass the chapel and library on the other side as we came down. This is a very busy, detailed drawing. It correctly reflects the busy nature of the halls that converge on Master Control. The purpose of this view is to identify the hotel functions provided by the jail. Receiving processing may be the most dangerous area. Some clients are new to the experience and cause delays. Some clients are very unhappy about the outcome of a recent hearing. And of course, groups of prisoners are passing on their way to exercise library or chapel. Property storage is critical to operation of the facilities. In addition to evidence, there are constant accusations over missing stuff, prisoner personal property. The fact that personal possessions at the time of processing may become evidence means that rules of chain of custody apply. This means that the lawyer who presents the evidence to the judge must be able to demonstrate that it was never left available for modification by unknown persons. The laundry farther down the hall is not exciting but necessary. Classrooms, we didn't mention that in the overview, but they will be addressed later in discussions of distant learning and video arraignment. They're holding cells and examining cells for the incoming processing. The infirmary has a small control room, examination rooms, and the suicide watch room we talked about. Our guide leads us to the right to units C and D, and we've got a picture of this. And it's just a detail of the pod as described previously. Let me mention a detail that didn't come up previously, but it's kind of important to this, and I won't say if it's a problem or an opportunity, but in any event, there's a utility room in the very center between the pods. This is not part of a Unit C. It's not a part of Unit D. It's a utility room. It's got electric panels. I think it had a hot water heater in it because we're pretty close to the laundry. Closed circuit TV power supplies. I didn't see any cabling or switching, but the power supplies for the TV were in there. The locking mechanisms. When you push a button to unlock the door, it has to go someplace to go click kerchunk so the electricity goes out to the door. Well, that was located in this utility room in the center. Then, as I look at the drawing, on the upper side, or the, what would this be, eastern side of the utility room is the control room for Unit C. And this is just a little room with a little desk, and it seems to me they had the control console. They did not have any TV. I wanted to give them TV, but everybody decided they didn't want TV. They'd rather look out the windows and see what was going on than look at a screen to see what was going on. I think that idea is changing. The commissioner there went along with putting in a camera. The reason we put in the camera was so that if the guard has to go into the area, he can call down a master control, I'm going in to the day room. So they watch him, make sure he doesn't get in any trouble. The wrist switches were a problem there. We'll talk about this later. But in any event, he wanted people to watch his back when he went into the day room portion of the pod. So we put a camera there to watch that. But remember, these cameras are inherently infrared. So you turn down a light so people can sleep. You can still see people getting up and walking around. I think it's a real good idea to get it onto a recorder, what's happening late at night. There's a fellow in there watching, but he would learn more by watching a monitor than he does by watching through his window. And again, we're looking at the picture. Unit C day room was to the east of the utility room. To the west, or down on my drawing, is the control room for Unit D. It's an identical mirror image of the thing. They've got some bathrooms and showers and dormitory and day room. In this facility, Unit D is considered high security. I was advised never to enter the area without a guard, stay back from any prisoners, and not engage in conversation. I believe there's a drafting area on the drawing I'm presenting you. I don't think there was a dorm in Unit D. Most designers think that dorms, you know, a barracks with the bunk beds and all that, is a real bad idea for high security. There's just too many places for things to happen unobserved. Day room is fine. Day room's required by detention guidelines. Dorm is considered excessive hazard for high security areas due to impaired visibility of all spaces. I believe the drawing should show a day room and no dorm. To the right of the arrowhead is a utility closet containing locking controls electronics, CCTV electronics, and electric panels. That is, click, or circuit breaker panels. Just up and to the right of the arrowhead is pod control for range C. It contains locking systems panel and desk. Just down and to the right of the arrowhead is the Range D panel. It is the second of four identical pod control rooms. If a dorm is present, it contains bunks similar to a barracks. The day room has a few extra heavy-duty tables and chairs, and these are really heavy-duty. Again, if you haven't been in a correctional facility, there's nothing on earth that matches the heavy-duty nature of what they do in there. The cells are to the left, out of direct sight of the guard station. Shower and toilet are to the right of the guard station. Not apparent on the plan drawing are ceiling finishes and firewalls that extend to the deck roof. These are very important when it comes time to fish CCTV, power, and data cables. By detention guidelines, all prisoner areas must have solid ceilings. That means there are locked access panels every 40 feet. Now, the facility I was working in, as I said, I ran some of the CCTV cable myself. The locked access panels weren't locked. They had a screw, and you turned it with a screwdriver, and they fell open in your face. And it was real fun, because when they fell open in your face, there was a HVAC duct 2 inches above the access panel. So, boy, you could get your pole in there to fish some cables. There were also some that were accessible. And again, there were a lot of drop ceiling spaces where it was very easy to fish cable. But you just don't feel good about that in a correctional facility. Box narrative. Because of the difficulty of fishing cables to the ceiling space, because of the hazards inside the facility, because of the chronic funding problems and time constraints, it's common for contractors to lay CCTV cables on the roof and snake them into utilities rooms through the HVAC roof penetrations. Don't do this. As I told you when we started, I was there at the same time they were replacing some air conditioners, and the HVAC guys cut those cables. They're illegal. They were in their way, so they cut them. We had lost a number of cameras for another reason, and the remaining ones went down as soon as those wires were cut. We turn around, go past master control, turn right towards units A and B. And again, we've got a detail showing the stuff that's in that side of the building, the chapel, the kitchen, classrooms, library, and pods A and B. Layouts of units A and B are similar to C and D, as discussed above. Unit A presently houses female offenders considered light security. Unit B houses male light security offenders. CCTV cameras were installed in all four dormitories for the lighting renovation project, but camera in Unit A has a switch. It's turned on only when the guard enters the dormitory. Once again, justification for these cameras is to protect the guards. I like that. The female prisoners, how shall I say this? I think the correctional officers are sensitive to the problems, and there's a lot of problems. I mean, this is a focus point for problems. The female prisoners are people who are really having a bad time of it. And as a rule, they do not have a lot of respect for authority. They're just in a situation where they're completely down and out. And they get a real kick out of offending people. And of course, some of the guards would like to have CCTV of what they would do to offend them. And again, that's kind of human too. So whereas I advise pretty good surveillance of the male prisoners, I don't think we need real good surveillance of the female prisoners. Now, again, there are maximum security, and prisons are different than jails. But the story I got from working out there, they didn't have the same kind of trouble with the female prisoners that they had with the male prisoners. And yeah, the guards wanted protection, and we put the camera in there, and the lady in charge of the Unit A was real happy to get it, as long as she had an absolute switch that nobody watched it except when she went in there and they were watching her back. I mean, that's reasonable. I mean, it's really very reasonable. I didn't mention this earlier, but all of the guidelines forbid taking pictures of people in the bathroom. And this may answer a question that you've had in the back of your mind for a long time. How is it prisoners get away with all these terrible things? They when you read something terrible in the newspaper, how did the prisoners pull that off? Well, you're not allowed to watch them in the bathroom. Yeah, I guess you can send a guard in, stand there with them if you want. But you can't put closed-circuit TV or recording equipment in there. There are places where they are unobserved. Plan detail shows library, chapel, kitchen, and exercise room. Exercise areas tend to be sites of confrontation, which may lead to violence if no intervention is made. The library and chapel had dropped ceilings, but had been used for emergency overflow housing. CCTV cameras were installed in 2004, and plans were in place to replace it with a solid ceiling. Kitchen and freezer are shown because of the common problem of losses of meat and food from public kitchens. Inside TV cameras were installed in 2004, but the recommended outside camera was deferred. They just weren't willing to spend the money to run the cable to watch the outside door to the kitchen wing. Let me share with you a box narrative. We're at the end of this session. We'll start in on electrical design tasks in just a moment. But I worked at a state university, and it's a wonderful experience to work at a state university. You get to see things from the inside that you read in the paper, and they look different in the newspaper than they do from the inside. There was a scandal in one of the kitchens, and they actually arrested the cook, and they were prosecuting her and all this, and they had videotapes of her taking boxes and boxes of stuff and putting it into her station wagon and driving off. Then they had more videotapes of her taking boxes and boxes of stuff and putting it into her station wagon and driving off. And on other days, they had boxes. And, I mean, to the outside, it looked like they got her. She got off. Beyond that, the judge ordered that she be reinstated to her position because all they could prove she had taken were broken cookies. Now, what does that tell you about things? Well, the first thing it tells you is closed circuit TV doesn't make security. Closed circuit TV is an aid. It can be a valuable tool, but somebody's got to document what's going on firsthand, not just look at the picture and zoom in at the name on the side of the box. Now, somebody's got to say that, you know, there was a case of meat before she left. There was no case of meat after she left, and she was carrying a box with blood dripping from it. You know, that would work in court. But just a picture of her carrying boxes, it doesn't work in court. Reason I say it doesn't work in court was she got off. Now, let's join again in just a few minutes. I'm going to go get a glass of water, and we'll talk about the details of picking out the pieces and parts and making them work to satisfy the needs of a jail.